Got a full show for you this morning, so thanks for listening in. We're going to kick it off with a talk about a potential property tax hike. No one likes to hear that. Summit County Council met last night. The big topic was property taxes, whether there could be a tax hike this year. Joining me in studio is the man with the notes, Summit County Council member Glenn Wright. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Renee.
I almost introduced you as a new member of the council, but we're beyond
fairly
that now.
In the fifth month.
Okay, so let's lay the foundation here. Why are we looking at a property tax increase in Summit County?
Sure. I think the basis of it is, comes from the way we collect our property taxes. And it's the whole truth in taxation concept that comes out of the state legislature. Counties only get property tax increases based upon increased physical growth in the county. So when a new building comes online, that building produces additional tax revenue. If you don't get significant growth, you don't get growth that will address issues like inflation, salary increases for employees, and 40% of our budget is our employees' salaries. And so in order to keep up with inflation, you have to have significant property, real property growth. And that goes in cycles. We had significant property, real property growth in the early 2000s. Since the recession, we haven't had a significant amount of growth.
And I noticed that in the staff report, and frankly, it surprised me. It said in prior years of significant development growth between 2000 and 2007, for example, the county experienced a 7.8 annual increase in property tax revenues due to new growth. However, between 2008 and 2015, the annual increase decreased to 2.4%. 2.4% growth, that's not enough to keep up with inflation?
Not for some of the Not to keep up with inflation and to do some of the additional demands that are on the county's radar, such things as public health issues that have come up in the last year, issues like affordable housing and
But Tom Fisher was talking to Leslie Thatcher about this earlier in the week, and, she challenged that idea. We're really not seeing growth in Summit County because it sure seems like there are a lot more people up here.
That is the perception, and one of the reasons for that is because we've had an incredible amount of employment growth. We have 14,000 inbound commuters every day, and so you see it on the roads, and the people are working here. And from a demand standpoint for services, our service needs are really related to the number of people that are here during the day. You have more people that need police and fire and roads and all of the services the county produces.
Parking facilities,
yep.
That kind of thing.
All of those things.
So how much money are we talking about? If you own a home or if you own commercial property in Summit County, what kind of percentage increase are we talking about?
Well, I guess first thing, we don't know it right now.
Okay.
There are recommendations from the budget committee. We have lost about nearly $5 million in purchasing power over the last 10 years on the county budget from the impact of very little growth in the property tax levy. To do that type of increase, we'd need about a 27% increase in the county and municipal levies. Now, to put that in perspective, the county tax is only about 15% of the average residence's tax bill. So now you're talking about more like 2 or 3% of your entire bill.
Okay,
counties are actually a fairly small participant in the on your tax bill. The schools are over 50% typically, and that varies from school district to school district around the county. But the county in total is only about 15%.
So the staff presented council with some revenue strategies.
Correct.
What did they present to you?
We were presented with a null strategy, as in no increase, a keep the rate where it is, because what happens with truth in taxation, as property assessed values go up, the tax rate goes down. So we could capture some revenue by just keeping the tax rate steady. And we'd have to do a truth in taxation hearing on that. And that would generate, if I remember right, somewhere in the $500,000 to $600,000 range for the county's budget. And the other option is the full 27%. Now, procedural, you know, we haven't made a decision on this yet. And the reality is a decision won't be made until after the truth in taxation hearings if we decide to go that route. We have to give our staff, particularly Michael Howard, the county auditor, direction on where to go, because he has to create the tax levies, which then go to Corey Forsling and, well, all the taxing entities in the county to put out their notices in July. So we have to have information to him by, I think he said, the 22nd of June. Mm. And we're going to try to do it before that so he's not up against a deadline to get it done. So probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we'll give him guidance on where we want to go. Now, understanding the process, we have to just because we say, let's say we go with the full 27%, and I'm not sure we will, that's then the maximum we can go during the truth in taxation hearing. The truth in taxation hearings will also take place during the budget process. So by that time, we'll be able to get hard numbers from the various departments. How much do you really need? There were some estimates on what are considered at-risk services.
What are those?
If we go to the null option. And those, you know, and those are things that would have to have cuts in services typically. Corrections, dispatch, communications, public health, library, sustainability, ambulance, law enforcement, public works, and are all things we would have to cut back on if we do not get any tax increase. So I think one of the questions we're asking the operating departments, tell us what you can do if we go to the full increase, and tell us what we're going to lose if we don't. Then we'll have the information for the public as they come to the truth in taxation hearings. Okay, here's your options. We can do 27%, and that's going to cost, we have some figures on it, which I didn't print out with me. Somewhere around $75 or $50 to $75 for the average household.
I have that.
You
right
have it?
Here.
Good.
Check that out.
Thank you.
That chart at the bottom.
Yes. Yeah. I was $51 for municipal services, $62 for county general. So total about $110.
For a $300,000 house.
The assessed value. Remember, that's
assessed value.
Assessed value, not your
good
market
point.
Value.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your 55% assessed value.
Glenn, is there any other way to raise this revenue outside of a property tax increase?
There are other sources of revenue that the county has, and those are sales taxes. But we don't have an opportunity, you know, to really raise those. And those are very variable. The thing about the property tax, it's currently about 45% roughly of the of our income base. It's once you set it, because of truth in taxation, it's steady over a period of years. So the property taxes is the one that we can directly address that gives us a steady flow of cash, which is necessary. One of the other things we have to do is we've been spending down our kind of our rainy day fund, and we need to build that up. And one of the suggestions from the budget committee is that we put about an extra $600,000 a year into that to build us up to what the budget committee considers a safe margin.
And how much is in that rainy day fund right now?
These are state mandates. To call it a rainy day fund, it's kind of your general fund backstop.
Mm-hmm.
We've used that. It's about $10 million.
Okay. I think we can all kind of come up in our own minds what that emergency would be.
We can't spend that money unless we get a a vote by the public. And we have certain minimum requirements we have, which that number escapes me right now, but we are approaching that number. So if we go below that number, the state will say you have to increase your we're pretty much right at the minimum number right
so
now.
I understand that Roger Armstrong suggested that maybe you wait a year, given the school bonds that we could be looking at. What do you think about that?
We'll see. We don't have a consensus yet. We'll be talking about that over the next couple of weeks, and that's one of the reasons we want to hear some more details from the operating departments. What we see here is the first cut on where we might have to make cuts if we don't do anything. I think we're going to do something. Tune in about, we'll make that decision within the next month.
Then
the final decision on what the tax rate will be will not be until the fall after we have truth and taxation hearings. See, we can come down from the maximum. We can't go above it. So we may well set a maximum that we don't actually use and then, set a lower levy, at that time. Right now, we don't have enough information because, as I said, the truth and taxation hearings will go on at the same time with the budget process. One of the motivations to do a large one now is then you don't have to go through the process again for a few years. The state legislature actually recommends that counties do a truth and taxation hearing about every 5 years, build up your fund balances, and then address the as you lose known purchasing power about every 5 years. We have not raised the general fund tax rate in the county as far back as we have records. And that goes back in the 1980s. So it's been over 30 years since the general tax rate has been raised. We raised municipal services a levy about 4 years ago. So now we're coming up on the five-year mark on that.
So we've got a council now that is all Democrats. So just to play devil's advocate, I'm going to put on my Republican hat and say, is there nowhere else in this budget where we can cut some fat to avoid raising taxes?
Well, that's what we'll be discussing during the truth and taxation hearings and the budget process. To be determined.
So you're 5 months into the council, though. Has anything caught your eye where you thought, that's a skull scratcher? Why are we spending money on that?
Well, the budget process really took place last year before I was on the council. So I can legitimately pass on that particular comment.
Deferring the answer.
Yes. one of the things I know is happening within the county staff, we're having more turnover. And we're having more turnover partially because people are being hired away from us. Sheriff Martinez and I are both in the American Legion together, and we got together for some Legion business a few weeks ago, and he was telling me he lost his one of his most experienced investigators recently due to a pay issue going to a different county. He tells me it'll take him 5 years to take somebody out of the uniform ranks to make them a detective of the quality of the person he lost. And you saw we recently had announcements of two fairly senior people that were losing from the county staff.
Who's that?
Matt Jensen, the emergency services coordinator, and Julie Booth, the communications person. They're both leaving momentarily.
That's not good news.
No. And our time of service, there was another graph in the presentation, which I didn't bring with me, but our length of service within the county has gone down from about 15 years on average to about 10 years. So we are encountering more turnover. Health insurance costs are going up also. All of these things don't necessarily follow the CPI.
Moving off the tax topic, as much as we love talking about it, another item of business from last night, you granted a property tax exemption to Summit Land Conservancy for a parcel it holds in Oakley near the river.
That is correct. And that was part of the conservation agreement and that was signed with Oakley with some county funds coming to them to help preserve some land along the Weber River in Oakley.
Glenn Wright, we've got to leave it there. Thank you for being here, Glenn Wright, Summit County Councilman. Welcome back to the Local News Hour. I'm Renee Bodley, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. The time is 8:24. Beautiful day here in Old Town Park City. It's Thursday, May 11th. There are two big projects on the agenda for Snyderville Planning Commission. They met on Tuesday night. Joining me on the phone this morning to talk about those projects is Commissioner Bea Peck. Good morning, Bea.
Good morning, Renee.
First, let's talk about this 22-acre parcel on Rasmussen Road. It's next to the Park City RV Resort, currently eligible for one residential unit, and the developer wants that zoning changed to allow 168 multifamily units. That's a big change. What's your initial reaction to that?
Well, part of the one of the questions that is raised by rezoning and or allowing for new density, because we do have a moratorium on new density until we've essentially placed all of the existing density that's allowed, is that there's a substantial element of this that would be affordable housing, which would create a set of circumstances that would provide such a community benefit large enough to perhaps waive the moratorium on new density. So it's intriguing to us, but before sort of any real analysis comes of that, at least there are some other major questions, one of which is the planned expansion by UDOT of an interchange, I shouldn't say expansion, the creation of an interchange at that exact location with an underpass from Rasmussen over to Kilby. So there are a lot of questions that remain to be answered. We're certainly in favor of more affordable housing, but we also want to have information provided on what our need is for affordable housing and what kind of affordable housing. Is it rentals? Is it purchase? Is it a mix? What's the range of median income we're trying to support and provide housing? So a lot of big questions, our reaction was in general positive because of the affordable housing component, but there's a lot to be done before we get to any concrete decisions.
And B, when will that proposed underpass be constructed, or is that just an idea at the moment?
Yeah, it's an idea at the moment, as we understand it, and it's UDOT's decision, probably and in partnership with Summit County, but and the county's got to make some decisions about this piece, too. So I don't have a crystal ball on that, but it would seem to me, and we did discuss this with the developer, was how do you go ahead and make plans if you may have to tear it down, move it? Do you sell that portion of the property first? Where to go with that? So there's a lot up in the air.
And that developer is Peter Caroon, who's known to our listeners probably for being the chair of the Utah Democratic Party. Did he give you guys any idea what kind of timeline he's hoping for on this?
No. I know that they are trying to get some direction from us before they get into it any deeper, but it's a little like the chicken and the egg. Our questions are, what kind of need do we have? What are you trying to supply? Will you have to tear it down once it's built? I think we, in general, we're certainly want to have more information in regards to anything to do with affordable housing. But our question is, what is the need and what would this fulfill? And we're hoping to get a lot more information on countywide what kind of housing is needed for the community.
Another consideration, East Canyon Creek is located within the boundaries of that parcel. Does that give you any pause?
Well, I think we certainly talked about appropriate setbacks. Just like all the other businesses that are along that road, I think that can be taken care of and dealt with. It's not like this development would suddenly be in a vacuum along that road. It's really more filling in pieces. And as you know, the Klein Dolly purchase, which is down the road towards the Jeremy Ranch, that's the same thing. So this road's going to be filled in which raised concerns about traffic. And are we simply creating, in our estimation, another Kilby Road where we have a lot of development pressure, and yet that road is not improved? And is this basically, are we creating our next bottleneck? So those are general questions that we'll be looking at very carefully.
Well, that transitions nicely to the next item you guys looked at in Quarry Junction, lots 6 and 10. Those are across from the Billy Blanco's and No Worries Cafe, and currently a parking lot there. You have an applicant proposing a 7,200-square-foot building on lot 6 and a 16,500-square-foot property on lot 10. The developer says those buildings are for retail and office space, and that is in compliance with the square footage allotments for that area. That's more traffic in that area, isn't it?
Yes, and this was a very preliminary look at this wish list. The questions really centered around architectural guidelines and design guidelines. We struggled a little bit with the presentation in terms of clarity of the maps and designs. It was a little confusing to us, but I think we, by the end of the meeting, kind of understood where they were going. We have questions as to uses, and we'll look forward to more detail. The retail end of it was really minimized, but the use of it by the particular tenant in mind is, we didn't get a very clear picture of it, but I know we'll have continuing questions. There was some concern about the service entrance and where that would be, whether through the parking lot or through the south of the project. So we're interested enough, certainly, to hear more about it. And as I say, there'll be a lot more work and information that will need to be provided to us before we go forward with anything.
So I'm sorry, did I hear you correctly that you guys were struggling with the retail space and what it would be?
The use. It's meant to be, there's not, we weren't told that there was that much retail, that it was really going to be more like a one-tenant office use with some incidental retail. So we're trying to get more information on that. As I say, most of the meeting was centered on the design of the site and the architectural guidelines and what it would look like. It's got some very unique features to it, which are intriguing. But I think further meetings will get a lot more information on what the proposed use is and to see whether it fits within our guidelines.
What are the unique features?
Well, it's an interior, as I understand it, it's almost building a warehouse space with internal modified shipping containers, if you will, that create internal office pods. It's really pretty cool, and we saw some examples of what it looks like in some other areas. But as I say, we were looking forward to some overviews and to see how it fits in the general design of Quarry Village. And we don't get too involved in the interior look of it, but from what we saw, it was very intriguing. It's proposed to be used by one tenant, the whole building. So our questions will be, what does this mean for future use? And if it is future retail, larger retail, where it gets broken up, we'd like to have some forecasts on that as well.
What's the next step for this project?
Probably another work session. These were very preliminary meetings, so there's a lot more time that will have to be put into them. So I expect a couple more work sessions at the very least.
Bipak, anything else you want to add from Tuesday's Snyderville Basin Planning Commission?
No, just that anyone and everyone's welcome to any of our work sessions, of course, anytime. So, but thanks for your time, Renee.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the Local News Hour. I'm Renee Bodley, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. Thanks for listening this morning. The time is 8:34. It's construction season in Park City, and a big project is about to begin on Main Street. Joining me this morning in studio is Lynn Wehrpeak. You may know her as the co-host of the Mountain Life and Cool Science Radio here on KPCW. She is also wearing a hat for the city. And then we've got Michelle Downard here as well. You're the deputy building official. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having us, Renee.
I need to turn on the microphone.
Thanks for having us.
You're a radio professional. You should have warned me about that.
Sorry.
Okay. So first, Lynn, you left your news job here last fall for the new gig. Just remind our listeners what you're doing for the community now.
So my title is Community Engagement Liaison. And, oh, there are a lot of things that entails. But a big part of it is liaising between the Main Street business owners and the city. So anytime there's any kind of city project, especially in the Old Town Core, you know, we're pretty dense here. We're packed in here. And so any little project, any partial road closure, a crane in the street, you know, affects sort of the ongoings in Old Town here. And so my job is to let the merchants and people coming and going in Old Town know what that is, what it's there for, whether it's a city project or even a really impactful private project like the Kimmel Garage.
So if you're a business owner or you're an employee or even a customer on Main Street, if you have questions about what's going on, if you see something that's some sort of project, you're the woman they should go to.
That's right. And I don't always have all the answers to everything, but I know how to find them. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's talk about this new project that's about to start. I walked up Main Street yesterday afternoon and it hasn't started yet from what I could tell. It's the Main Street Sidewalk Replacement from 4th Street to Treasure Mountain Inn. Michelle, fill us in. What's this project about?
Well, actually, I'm probably the one to fill in on that one.
Sorry. Go ahead, Lynn.
So over the last handful of years, except for 2016, in which we gave Main Street a break from the sidewalk project, we've done it in phases over several years, and we have the last phase just about to begin. So what this is taking out the old, cracked, you know, heaved sidewalks, and we're putting in granite pavers surrounded by concrete and upgrading the storm drains and the water meters and anything else that needs upgrading as we go along and tear up the sidewalks. The last phase will be, as you said, the 4th Street is the low point, right, by the Burns Cowboy Shop across the street from Java Cow and up to the Treasure Mountain Inn. Next summer, there will be a stretch of sidewalk replaced up in conjunction with the Brew Pub Plaza project up to Grappa, as high as Grappa. But for this year, just Burns Cowboy Shop to Treasure Mountain Inn on that west side of the street.
And that's where the Parkite is, right? Right in front of the Parkite?
Yes.
Which was just redone.
It was redone. So it finished about 2 years ago. Couldn't live without a sidewalk for a couple of years before we came in. And so they did, you know what, it's not a temporary sidewalk. It's a fine sidewalk, but it didn't have the granite pavers and the kind of the design that we wanted to achieve to make the whole sidewalk project tie together.
So this starts when and is going to wrap up when?
So they're starting to inload all the granite pavers. Those will be, you'll see them in the Brew Pub parking lot on the north end beginning on Monday. So we're bringing in the goods. Demolition of the old sidewalks will begin the next Monday. So I think that's the 22nd of May. Mm-hmm. We'll start right in front of the eating establishment. We want to get that section done first so that they can get their popular dining deck in for summer business. And we'll go in 100-foot sections, so it won't disrupt the whole side of the street at once. And each section of 100 feet will take approximately 2 weeks. And it'll be really nice. And it's all part of the Old Town improvements that have, you know, that they've been working on for several years now.
So, Lynn, 2 weeks per section, 6 sections, 12 weeks we're looking at.
Yeah, approximately.
Okay.
Barring any complications, right?
And then just, I know this isn't really in the immediate future, but Brew Pub, when would that start?
Well, we're planning on spring of 2018. So still in that design phase there, council is looking at exactly what they want to do. So they're still deciding, you know, what's enough, what's too much. Each time the design comes back to council, you know, they tweak it a little bit. So we're honing in on that, but expect that to start in about a year from now.
Okay. You've got another great tool for the citizens to look at everything that's going on in the area. It's called the Backhoe Report.
Yes, the BACO report. So this is sort of my compilation of all of the public projects going on in town, plus, like I said, the visible and impactful private projects. And I'm really excited about this. If you can get excited about geographic information systems, otherwise known as GIS, and I'm excited. So if you go to the city's website, this is a dynamic, kind of a live report that I upgrade every couple of weeks, or excuse me, update every couple of weeks. So you go to the government tab and then click on current construction projects, and it takes you to this handy map, and you can hover your browser over or the mouse over any of the projects that are colored and in place, and it'll kind of tell you the story of what's going on, and it's all bullet pointed on the left-hand side. So it's really handy. I mean, we know, like, KPCW does a great job of updating on all everything that's going on, right? But, you know, not everyone reads a park record. Not everyone listens to KPCW. And if you're driving through, and I know this happens to everyone, you'll see some project, and you'll say, I didn't know about that. What is that? You can just go to the city's website, parkcity.org, government current construction projects, and you can find it. Educate yourself. It's kind of fun to click around on the map.
Lynn, everyone listens to KPCW.
It's true.
And the map is
Or they
cool.
ought to.
It's a Google map, right? It's like a satellite image map.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just looking at a grid.
Right.
You actually see the buildings, which is really cool. So Michelle, Deputy Building Officer with the city, one of the big projects that people are interested in is what is happening at the Kimball Garage, the old Kimball Arts Center. We've talked about the event space. We know that's been somewhat controversial. What is the status of that project? It seems like it's been going on a long time.
Sure. So they've started construction, of course. As you can see, we have been talking at our last couple of council meetings regarding the tower crane that's going to be placed on the Heber Avenue side. We are still in discussions with the developer to finalize the airspace agreements and just the technicalities in the process required in order to make sure that the city rights and city is protected as far as any kind of impact to the public way and to the public, and then also the development is something that can be accomplished successfully. And so it's a balancing act for the building department in general when it comes to mitigating and balancing the impacts of the public and the construction activity that's happening throughout town.
So will we ever see a closure of that intersection of Park Avenue and Heber for this construction, or will that always stay open?
I think it's very unlikely that we would ever allow a full closure of that intersection. It would have to be something that would be, you know, a public safety issue that wasn't avoidable and or something very justifiable. I don't anticipate that we would ever condone or allow something to affect traffic and the public transit system in that way.
So I know the L.L. Bean guys, when they came in town to announce that they're going to take that retail space in that building, that they are crossing their fingers for an opening in time for the Thanksgiving Christmas shopping season. Do you think that's likely?
You know, I don't know that they're going to make Thanksgiving. It really is up to them at this point and what they can accomplish within their construction timeline and a question for their contractor. It is an ambitious schedule, and so that would be a good question for the developer at this point.
Anything else you want to add on that project that you think our listeners need to know?
You know, just the fact that we are very sensitive to it. We are trying to, like I said, maintain that balance. And so if there are questions, concerns, of course, visit the city's website and keep track of the BACO report that Lynn is circulating out there. We're trying to keep everybody involved and aware of what they will be seeing around town, which will involve the Kimball Arts Garage and construction throughout town.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add about construction projects? Anything happening this orange cone season?
Well, I just say go to the BACO report. We could talk all day about it, but I know we're limited on time. I do just want to say, though, that excuse me, with the Kimball Garage, there have been a bunch of partial road closures as they're trying to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
The contractor is very aware and cognizant of the need, you know, has built a lot in metropolitan areas and is really concerned about public impacts. So I'm trying to send out those email updates when I get them. So if you live in the area or you're doing business and you're not getting my emails, just go on that government tab, current construction projects page, and you'll find my email address and send me an email and I'll put you on the list.
Sounds great. Lynn Ware Peak and Michelle Downard with the city, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Jane Austen's classic takes on a modern twist at the Egyptian Youth Theater this weekend. It's called Emma, a pop musical. Show has an all-local cast, and joining me in studio, we have Gemma Feltovich, Stella Strader, and Caroline Waldman. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Are you missing school right now?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's great.
Right on. Okay, so the spot that we've been running on the radio says, girl power never sounded so good. How so?
There's a lot of singing in it, and it's kind of timeless music. There's music by Katy Perry, and there's like Katy Perry and the Supremes, and what else is there?
Cyndi Lauper, right?
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper and
Sarah Bareilles.
Pat.
I got it. I got it right here. You got the Ronettes? Yeah. Pat Benatar, Heartbreaker.
Yeah, Pat Benatar.
Gemma, Pat Benatar. How can you forget her? That's a great one. So all these songs, these modern songs, are fit into basically a 19th century woman's novel and plotline. How does that work?
Okay, so the book is based in like past time. And so as us teenagers, what the musical is about is it has to do with teenager and high school life. So they take all these examples of like marriage and stuff and change it to like dating. And it's just very high school and very matchy, mitchy. And Emma is like trying to make matches for her friends. And it all starts with like a wedding and it ends with a wedding. And it's great.
Okay. So can your age group relate to that? Do kids your age date or do they just kind of go together and hang out in packs?
I mean, it kind of depends. There's definitely both. Obviously, it's kind of hyped up to another level because it's supposed to be a play and it's comedic and very dramatic. But it's very relatable as well. You can kind of take some lessons from it and apply it to your real life.
There are kind of some timeless themes in it. Like there's kind of some underlying themes of classism, as in the original novel that that the author originally kind of intended the book to be about.
So do you see that in your production? Do you guys kind of deal sort of with different cliques and class structures in this production?
I definitely think so. We play the Welcoming Committee, which is kind of like this group of like popular girls who are backup singers for some of the bigger productions or like lying in like dances and stuff and singing and stuff. So there are different cliques and always and different social classes. There's one person that one character wants to date, but Emma doesn't think she should. Because he doesn't go to the school and he does work as like a dishwasher / busboy. So
busboy. Well, I understand that maybe two young kids don't want to go to this. That elementary school maybe wouldn't be able to relate as much.
It depends how mature the kids are. Like they can definitely come see it. It's not that it's super inappropriate for them. It's just like some jokes will go over their head and some things they won't be able to relate to as much as older kids will.
It's they're recommending, they're recommending 12 and over.
So, 12 and over, okay. And give us the details. Anyone listening, and this sounds intriguing to them, when are the shows?
So we have a show on Friday at 7 p.m., this Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m.
And do you know ticket prices?
Well, adults are $14, and kids 17 and younger are $9.
How long have you guys been working on this?
Well, we auditioned in January, and I think, it started at, like, the end of February were our first rehearsals.
And this is part of the Youth Theater at the Egyptian. Are all you guys alumni of that program?
Yeah. I've done one play there before, but I know that these have done more, and I've done lots of theater my entire life.
That was Stella. Gemma, how about you?
I've been doing plays since I was in fifth grade with the Egyptian Youth Theater, and I've only not done one, which was Alice in Wonderland, when I was kind of taking a little bit of a break from it.
And Caroline?
Well, I moved here the summer before sixth grade, so I've been doing it since I moved here, but not as long as some of the other kids.
And is the folks, the cast, the workers behind the scene, the stage workers, are they also local and kids as well?
Yeah, the tech crew is made up of kids of the same age group. Some a little
amazing.
Bit younger.
They're great.
We couldn't go on without them.
No.
They're going to be the directors and producers of the future, so you really want to suck up to them, right? They'll be holding the castings. Anything else you think our listeners need to know about this production?
Not really, unless they have any questions.
Okay. guys, thanks for being here this morning. Good luck with the production.
Yeah, thank you.
KPCW News Time is 8:52. This is the local news hour. Thanks for listening in. The Youth Sports Alliance has a new partnership with the National Ability Center. Joining me this morning in studio is Heather Sims, the YSA Youth Programs Director, Lexi Rohner. Yes. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay. And she's a Get Out and Play participant parent, and her son, Cole. Hey, Cole. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
So, Heather, why don't we start with you? What is this new partnership?
Well, National Ability Center have always helped us out. But this year, after our Activate Middle School program debut, we actually did part of that at the National Ability Center. And they offered to be more involved in the program. And so over the last couple of months, we've had Cole here, who has cerebral palsy. And he has taken part in ice skating and cross country, and a National Ability Center have provided coaches so that he can take part. And our whole the Youth Sports Alliance is is access for all, and I think that some parents here, especially if they don't ski, they're a little bit nervous about having their child with maybe a disability ski, and so National Ability Center have stepped in and helping us out.
Okay, cool. You tried ice skating and cross-country skiing, I understand. What was your favorite?
Ice skating.
Why did you like that?
Because I did a program with my mom.
And your mom's right here. Lexi, what did you think when Cole said, I want to ice skate?
Well, he had a little bit of an advantage because I'm a figure skating coach.
Oh, there you go.
So I was in a unique position. Cole is a triplet, and they were born 11 weeks premature, and they could fit in the palm of my hand. They had a lot of medical issues. So ice skating and equestrian hippotherapy are actually two of the most beneficial sports for cerebral palsy, and I was in a unique position to actually help him with that by putting him on the ice. So he'd been on the ice on and off since he was about two. And when we got here, we moved here 9 months ago. We did a lot of due diligence to determine what was available here in Park City, and knowing that the National Ability Center was available was amazing for us. And Cole's been able to partake in different sports. He does baseball with Program Director Tracy Meyer. And I called Tracy and asked her to have somebody come to help him on the ice. And Heather said anything else he wants to try, we're happy to partner with the NAC and give it a shot. So he tried cross country. So it was exciting to see him on skates, but it was more exciting for me even to see him try cross-country and downhill skiing.
And Cole, what did you think about those two?
It was pretty fun because cross-country my mom did with me. And here's a different story about the regular skiing. Is that every time I fell, I got to do snowball with that mystery thing.
You got to do a snowball?
He got to throw snowballs at Tracy when he fell.
Oh.
Which was the best skiing I ever spent.
So what do you think you'll do next year, Cole? What's the next activity you want to try?
Well, after 4 or 5 years of baseball and some skiing, well, 6 lessons in total, I may want to try...
Maybe some cycling?
Yep.
He saw the bikes at the NAC shed, and he looked at one in particular and said, Mom, I have to have one of those.
Heather, if someone is listening to Cole and Lexi talk about the program and they're interested, where should they go? What should they do?
So first of all, they when they sign up for any of our programs, they can request medical, if they have any medical issues, they can request help, and we will try our best to find that right person that will work with them. I know that Cole's coach, his cross-country coach, they had a great chemistry with each other, and they fed off each other, and Cole is a little joker, and so the NAC have been excellent at providing help for us. And it doesn't matter whether they're in part of the Get Out and Play program or in the Activate. The Activate is for the Ecker Hill students currently, which we started this year, and those are for 6th and 7th. And our big news is actually that we're going to Treasure Mountain next year.
Ooh.
So the Activate program will go all the way up to 9th. So if a student has some special needs that they need help with doing any of our activities, they can contact me at ysaparkcity.org, and we will do our best to find the right match to help them take part.
And Cole, if any kids are out there listening, what words of encouragement? They might say, Cole, I'm a little afraid to try this. What would you say to them?
Just do your best.
Good advice. Just do your best. And I noticed on the Youth Sports Alliance Facebook page that you had those Ecker kids out skateboarding the other day.
We did. We actually, the Activate program, we have teamed up with 16 organizations around Park City. 16. And Skull Candy was one of them. And they did a day at Trailside Park, and we got about 18 kids take part. And then at the same time, I had another 22 kids at UOP doing ropes courses, and another 12 from doing mountain biking, and that's just the Activate program. And on the Get Out and Play this last Friday, we had 48 kids biking, which hopefully Cole will be taking part next year.
Totally.
And doing the mountain biking over at Round Valley, and we have another 48 kids ice skating. So any given Friday, there is something for kids to do.
And how much does it cost? What are the program costs?
So the costs vary depending on whether there's transportation needed or not. But a good example would be the mountain biking for Get Out and Play is $100, but it also includes a camelback. The mountain biking for Activate for the ECHA kids, it doesn't include the mountain biking camelback, but it's $50. So it ranges from $50, you know, to just over $100, depending what it is. And as always, we offer scholarships. And this year for the Get Out and Play program, we hit a record number of 231 scholarships offered.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, there are scholarships, and people can apply online for those as well.
And your major fundraiser is in October, is that right?
Yes, we have the Jan's Winter Welcome, which is in October. And then we also have a golf tournament on June the 6th, and we still have a few teams spots available. And if anybody would like to sign up for those, it is on our website at ysaparkcity.org.
Great. Heather Sims with YSA. Thank you. Cole and Lexi, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
We'll be right back.